going to talk about one of the rather frustrating elements of Bible study tonight, trying to figure out weights and measures. And there's some reasons why it can get so frustrating. I don't know if any of you have done that. You've been reading in your Bible and you come across these measurements. We don't measure things like that anymore. We don't use those words. And, excuse me, I got to turn this on.
So I don't use the words that we see in the Bible about how we measure things. We start looking them up, and sometimes it just gets all that much more confusing. And there's going to be some reasons for that. You go back a ways, and a lot of the measurements were based upon the body and very practical ways of measuring things. And practical in the sense that it's measurable for personal use. But when you get into buying and selling, and especially when you start doing so across cultures where other cultures' body types are of a different size, then you start running into problems. So a lot of the things that we see here have to do with the size of the body. So we measure distance. I didn't realize they went down so far as to measure with the finger, but the width of the finger is not quite 3/4 of an inch, I think, is what they measured a finger as. You put 4 of those fingers together and you've got a palm or a hand's breadth. They don't count the thumb, so they're just measuring across here. So if I'm measuring something small, I might say I've got 5.5 hand breadths. Well, that's still kind of small. I can measure that in a span. Well, a span is to spread your fingers out here, and you measure from the tip of your thumb to the tip of your pinky finger. That's 1, 2, and just a little bit more, probably 3 fingers more. So it's very practical. We still do this somewhat today. If you just have to estimate a measurement, it's easy just to hold your fingers out there and say, well, there's 1, 2, 3, and go over. I don't need a precise board. I just need to cut this board close, and I can 1, 2, 3 and cut it. I don't have to get out, you know, the tape measure, and I'm not worried about getting it down to the 16th of an inch. So we still kind of use some of that today. So 3 palms equal a span. But I find a problem with that. When I started measuring myself, I must have a small span or a large palm, because it doesn't equate. And that's one of the problems with this kind of measurement. And I'm sure if I'd bring Clark up here and measure his hand, it's going to be different than mine. And we bring up Fred, and his hand's going to be different than Clark's. And so we just kind of fall into an average. 2 spans equal a cubit. And a cubit, the common cubit, was 17.5 inches. And archaeologists find it remarkable how they can go to the building and they just have, you know, the foundation or whatever, and they can measure things, and it's very precise on that 17.5 inch cubit. Or they could measure it in the fathom or the rods, and it comes out very precise. 4 cubits equal a fathom. And a fathom would be just to spread your hands out. I didn't realize this. A fathom is from tip to tip. So it's approximately 6 feet. And a rod is 6 cubits, which would be 8 feet 9 inches. Somebody can look up Ezekiel 40 and verse 3 through 5.
Which was a cubit and a hand breadth. So he measured the thickness of the wall, 1 rod, and the height, 1 rod.
Okay. There's a number of things going on here. We see this is a vision. God's having the temple measured, and he's holding a measuring rod, and he has a length of cord of flax. And those were the tools of measurement. A cord can have a knot or something tied in it every so many feet. Of course, they didn't use feet, but so many cubits. And you can stretch that out and count how many cubits something is, or just to use the rod. It's a very specific length, and they'd be able to lay that down one after the other and measure distance with the rod. But it's referred to as a tool, but it's also referred to as a measurement. And in this case, a very specific measurement is given. It's not just the 6 cubits. What was the distinction in that verse? Every cubit was a cubit and a handbreadth. So the cubit is from your elbow to the tip of your finger, which is approximately 17 inches, and then a handbreadth on top of that. And this probably is what they would refer to as the royal cubit. And so it starts getting complicated. We can see as we have the same words being used and described in different ways. Longer distances, they really weren't concerned about. The largest thing that you'd probably be measuring would be a field or something that had to do with your farming, and they weren't so concerned about exactly how many miles. You know, as you look at these measurements, in our way of thinking, we're very scientific. We're very precise. We've grown up in an age of technology where you know exactly how far a mile is. You know measurements down to, you know, 1/8 of an inch, 1/16 of an inch. We're very precise as we measure things because science is requiring us to be precise. But in an age when we're not concerned with science and observation and things like that, we're just living life. And the practical thing isn't, you know, how many inches is it from here to there? It's more practical to understand how long does it take you to get from here to there. And so we measure things according to the time that it takes to get there. Measuring a distance, we talk about a day's journey or a 5-day journey. Well, that's kind of vague, right? And in our thinking, it's like, okay, how many miles can you go in a day? Well, they weren't concerned. You know, one day you're going to make more miles than another. It all just kind of averages out. It's going to take you about 5 days to get there. They weren't in a hurry. They weren't precise in these things. The Romans were a little bit more precise. They had some measurements. The stadion was about 200 yards, and that's what they call a furlong. I'm still learning stuff here, furlong. I read the word often enough, but I didn't know what it was, 200 yards. And then for the Jewish people, they were concerned about a Sabbath day's journey. And they think this goes back to when the tabernacle was set up and the distance between the tabernacle and the people. If they were to come on a Sabbath day to worship at the tabernacle and go back home, that would be considered a Sabbath day's journey. And so they, you know, measured it out and said it is about a mile in one direction and a mile back home, or a total of 2 miles. And of course, you know, the Pharisees get all worked up about the exactness of these things, and so they were very careful not to take journeys beyond a Sabbath day's journey on the Sabbath. So that's measured in paces. Well, that's another very practical way of measuring things. Yeah. And we still do that. We step something off. And sometimes, you know, David, if he steps things off, he's going to get there a lot sooner than I am. My short legs. But, you know, we see these distinctions. They're very practical and very personal. But when we start getting involved in trade, it becomes a problem. You know, if I was buying a piece of property, would I want to buy it according to David's measurements or Simba's measurements? If I'm selling a property, it'd be just the opposite, right? I want to get the very best deal that I can get. Measurements of capacity. This is where things get really confusing too. We have so many different words we don't use anymore. The Homer, and we're not talking about the Simpsons here. A Homer was, the very word means a donkey load. And so it was the amount that a donkey would be able to carry reasonably. I mean, a person could overload their donkey or whatever. That's not what we're talking about. You treat your animal well. You'd only want to put this much on him. And so this would be a very large basket, or probably measured in multiple baskets. Sometimes it's called a core. And one source says it's about 58 gallons. I think that may be liquid measure, but I'm not exactly sure. The next small basket is the ephah, and it's supposedly 1/10 of an omer. And let's look at Zechariah 5 and verses 6 and 7. Okay, a basket going forth, and in that, as you continue on, there's a woman in the basket, and it has a lid on it, and so I run into a little bit of a math problem. If an omer is 58 gallons, that's about the size of an oil drum, and an ephah is 1/10 of an omer, a homer, that would make it about 6 gallons, or a little less, right? How small of a lady do you have to be to fit in a 6-gallon bucket? Now, here's a mineral tub. Do I have any volunteers? I think this is approximately, I don't know, 20 gallons? Maybe you farmers can tell me. No ladies want to come and try to fit in my ephah basket here? Yeah, come on up. Can you hide inside of this? Just climb in and hide in there like as if you don't want anybody to see you. Yeah, oh, I can see your hand. Get it down in there. Oh, there, she just disappeared. Well, little girls can hide inside of a mineral tub. Come on up. Thank you. But I don't think I'd get too many takers for ladies trying to fit down in that. So we have this problem of measurement. Even as they are talking about it on the same page, the math isn't adding up. So you can see the frustration. But this is a picture of the oldest basket that has ever been found. And of course, their dating process is carbon dating. It's all based on evolutionary stuff. And they say it's 15,000 years old. But it's found outside of Jerusalem. And it's hard to see proportions there, but I saw another picture of it, a lady standing beside it, and it would be about that big, which is about the size of this tub here. And so I kind of thought that would be somewhat similar volume, as it is a very big woven basket. So the next size smaller is the omer. Instead of the homer, it's the omer. And it's a 1/10 of the ephah. And then we have some much smaller quantities. The quab or the cob, it's spelled a couple of different ways. So 6 cobs is a say, which is approximately 1.22 liters. So we're getting down kind of small there. 30 says equal a core. Let's look at 2 Kings chapter 6 and verse 25.
There was a great famine of silver.
I'd be using a pretty small measurement too, measuring out dove's dung. What horrible situation. So that's a little more than a liter, if I understand right, which is a lot of dove dung. We have liquid measurement, and just like today, you know, I'm not very good in the kitchen, but you ladies know that there's a difference between dry measurement and liquid measurement as you're doing your recipes. Well, they had that too. There's the equivalent of the ephah in liquid measurement is a bath, and 10 baths of liquid would equal the homer. There's the hin. If you notice, you have a number of these are based on a tenth. So they're working off of a decimal system. And so then we get these other measurements that deviate from that. The hin is about 7 pints. A sixth of a hin is the minimum amount of water that is needed to stay alive each day. I think that was recorded in Ezekiel, maybe. Then there's the core. It's used to measure large quantities of liquid, and it's probably equivalent to the homer. And so I think I got that a little bit mixed up when I put it up there as 58 gallons. So wet measurement, you probably wouldn't want to put more than 58 gallons of oil or water or something on your donkey. That would be very heavy. But when you're measuring grain, that's very light. And so it's going to be a much larger volume. And so again, we're going back to this aspect of practicalness. The wet volume is judged by how much your donkey can carry. Your dry volume is judged by how much your donkey can carry, but they're going to be two completely different sizes. Measures of area. And there isn't really very much measure of area in the Hebrew language. They just don't use it. In terms of, we see them measuring the temple and such and its length and width, but they don't have a designation to describe that. We think of farmland, we think of acres. And I'm not up on how big an acre is, but the Jewish people would not have talked about their farmland in terms of acres. It just wasn't in their vocabulary. And so the Egyptians, which were much more scientific, they were much more mathematical, they used a cubit. Well, so a cubit now means this. It also means the royal cubit, and now it means an area of land. So a cubit of land, when we're talking area, is 1 cubit wide and 100 cubits deep. So it's kind of like figuring board feet. But you have this set designation. It's a cubit of land. And then 100 cubits makes a square. Now this is about 2/3 of an acre. 100 cubits would be 2/3 of our designation of an acre. So it's not a very large piece of land. They would rather measure land by the amount that their ox was able to plow during a day. And that was only 4/10 of an acre, not quite half an acre. But then they also measured land according to how much seed it took to sow. And so they would use some different terminology there. Let's look at 1 Samuel 14:14. Okay, so when you talk about their idea of half an acre, do you have a note in the margin of your Bible there? The measurement. Half of the area that an ox could plow in a day. So we talk about half an acre of land was actually probably closer to a quarter of an acre of land in our measurement. So, you know, it's one of those, just trying to visualize scripture, we get a picture of what an acre of land is, a half an acre, now we're down to a half of a half, a quarter acre. So it's not a very large piece of ground that he stood there and defended. So we're seeing the problems. They were imprecise in their mathematical and measurement designations. But there's also other problems. Their definitions changed over time. You realize the Bible's written over a very long period of time, and things changed a lot during that time. And so it's hard to look at something that maybe in Genesis is going to be different than what it is in 2 Kings. And it's going to be different than what it is in the New Testament, just because of the way that things change over time. There's different cultures, and different cultures use different measurements. And you think about the Bible, it's written in three different languages, and it covers multiple cultures and relationships between those cultures. And then you add time on top of that, you've got a real recipe for confusion if you're trying to be precise about something that God really doesn't intend for us to be that precise about. Okay, he gives us these things to give us a picture of life and teach us lessons and stuff, but it wasn't there for us to sit down and figure out the minute comparisons. We get caught up in things that miss the point if we get too deep into this stuff. So I want us to understand that there's just some problems as we approach the scriptures in regards to comparison of measurements. The Assyrians used a measurement system based upon the number 6, or I think another point I read it's 60, but it's divisible by 6. You count to 6 and then you start over. We count to 10. And the Egyptians had a number system that started on the tens. And so we have terminology in the Bible that carries from both cultures. And we're going to have a hard time if we're trying to compare apples and oranges here. We don't understand the relationship between these numbers. You have dry measure and wet measurements. And so we read of a hen. Is it a wet hen or a dry hen? You know, we have to realize that we don't have the exact concept to work with, and we have very little archaeological evidences, because a lot of those types of baskets would deteriorate very rapidly if left in the weather or destroyed by fire and stuff. So there's just not a lot to look at to establish even an average. And of course, you know, if you're making a basket, you're going to call it a hen. Well, you're not working it out of a precise factory. Your basket's going to be a little bit different than my basket. It might be wider, it might be taller, just by a little bit, but there's no set standards like we have today. We're very precise in our standards. There's different words that refer to the same similar measurement. We already saw that, a cubit. Well, is it a short cubit? Is it a long cubit? Is it a royal cubit? Is it a cubit of area of land? So it's the same word, but it refers to different things. And as we just read over those things, we may not understand the precision of what that means. We're just getting a general idea. Some words referring to different measurements. So their terminology is very loose. It can go both ways. Come to weights. It becomes a little more important because this is where we start putting money in the bank. This is where trade is going to be taking place. It's not so much about, you know, getting the harvest from my field to my barn. How big of a basket do I need to do that? Now I'm trading with you my grain for your grain, getting different kinds of grain, or I'm selling my grain to you, and we need a way of making this trade work. And so it comes down to measurement of weight. There's a lot more archaeological evidence for weights than there was for a lot of those other measurements, because they are made out of more reliable, more durable elements. They found many sets of weights. Some of them are stone, and they have etched on them the exact amount of weight that they were supposed to be. And others were cast in metal, like we see here, these lions. These are Assyrian weights. It's kind of neat how that larger weight there, his tail comes up over his back, and I'm assuming the larger weights that probably hang on a different type of scale rather than sitting in the basket of the scale. So it's kind of functional there. Those smaller ones don't have that. They look at all that archaeological evidence. They come up with some of the same problems. Because with our, you know, technology, we get a set of weights like that. We're going to want to know how precise are those weights. And we measure them according to a set standard. And they find that there's a vast difference in these weights. In fact, it was so customary, part of the reason we find such difference in the weights is it was customary for a merchant to have two sets of weights, one that he used to buy things with and one he used to sell things with. And it was culturally acceptable. I mean, it's just your margin of profit. And you knew what you were getting when you were going to deal with this guy. He's using his light set of weights, you know, and he's pocketing, that's his profit margin. And so that's why there's one reason why there's so many weights that say the same thing, but they don't weigh the same thing. Again, we see the Babylonian system based on 60, the Egyptian based on 10. The word shekel we come across in Scripture means to weigh. And here we have some of the divisions of weight there. One talent is equal to 60 minas, which is equal to 3,600 shekels, which is equal to 86,400 gerahs. So that doesn't mean a whole lot to us, but it just, if we can just kind of get that picture, as we read Scripture, we say, okay, we're talking talents. That's on the really heavy side of things. And if we're talking shekels, that's on the lighter side of measurement, and the mina falls in the middle. Shekels are about a third of an ounce, a talent about 67 pounds. So there's quite a bit of separation there. One that I didn't put up was the PIM, and that is 7.76 grams. I think it's only mentioned where the Israelites were going down to the Egyptians to get their plows sharpened, and they had to pay a PIM. So these were made of stone, made of metal. They even made them out of shaped like animals. They got kind of creative. There were royal weights and there were common weights. The royal weight was twice as heavy as the common weight. I don't know how that was used. I hope it wasn't for determining taxes. All right, time to pay your taxes. Put a shekel's worth on the scale there. No, you thought that was a shekel. Double it. Come on, keep it coming. I don't know what purpose it had, because it seems to me it's just kind of a pride thing. You know, I'm the king. I have a bigger cubit. I have a bigger weight to measure things with. Maybe it's the sense, too, that as you get into government, you're going to be dealing with much larger quantities of things, and so you're able to scale to that. But, yeah, I didn't see any good explanation of that. The problems of fair trade. Proverbs 20 and verse 14. Bad, bad, says the buyer. So the towns would have a marketplace, and in those marketplaces, there were times that they were just shut down. There was nothing going on. And in larger towns, they would have a market all the time, but in the smaller towns, probably not. Sometimes the market amounted to when the caravan came through, they would set up these tents in the marketplace and set up their booths, and they'd start doing barter and getting things off of the caravan and selling to the caravan that they would take on to the next town. And so it was a sense of barter. And even today, a lot of the world still does business that way. They thrive on bartering. You know, I go to the store, I need to pick up a cluster of tomatoes, I go to the down the aisle, I pick it up, I take it down to the checkout, bleep, put it in my bag, pay, and I'm out the door. That's not how they would have shopped. When they went to shop, they would have considered, it's going to take me a day to do my shopping. Because I'm going to go through the market, I'm going to look over all of the goods, I'm going to find the ones that I want and in the quality that I need, and then I go and I offer a price. And I'm going to offer way low. And the salesman, he's like, no, you know, you wanted it for a dollar, I want $10 for that cluster of tomatoes. You're ridiculous. You're way overpriced. I don't need to. I give you $1.50. And then they get to arguing about the quality of the thing. And then they start insulting each other. And they insult the product. And they just get almost boisterous and violent. And then they finally work themselves down. And, okay, I'll buy your cluster of tomatoes for $5. And they shake hands on it. And they go away best friends. It's like, what? Did you hear what you called his mother? You know? Oh, and now everything's just great. But this whole process of buying a cluster of tomatoes just took 30 minutes. You know, I'm in and out of the store in just 3 minutes, if that's all I'm after. But that's the whole cultural difference between them and where we live today. And so there's this constant, cultural mindset we have to kind of approach things with. How were things measured? Let's look at Luke chapter 6 and verse 38.
It will be measured back to you.
In a culture of hospitality, in a culture of saving face, where your reputation is very important, they didn't want to have any sense of having not given you what you were buying. And so you were buying some kind of grain or something, You'd bring your basket up, and they would take their measuring basket and set over yours, and they'd pour their grain in there, and they'd shake it, and they'd pour more in, they'd shake it, and they'd press it down, they'd pour more in, and then when it's just as full as they could possibly get it, they would press a little hole in the top of it, and then they would take their hands and start pouring grain until it made a little kind of a cone at the top until the grain started falling into your basket. And that is how they knew they had filled that up. It would not be considered full until it was overflowing into your basket. And then they dump it out into your basket, and you pay for it, and you went on your way. But isn't that something? Because here's the same guy has in his pouch two sets of weights. He doesn't want to have the outward appearance of robbing you, but at the same time, he's robbing you because he's using the wrong weight of weight. It's all about pride. It's all about image. And of course, it was well understood in those cultures what was going on. So it was just kind of a, you know, I'll let you lie to me, and you let me lie to you, and we'll all feel good about it, I guess. So it was common to have two different weights, a heavy and a light. But the Jews were not allowed to do that. Deuteronomy 25 and verse 13.
The measures large and small.
Nope, that's fine. Leviticus 19, 35 and 37 through 37. Okay, Micah 6, 10 through 12.
Is there yet a man in the wicked house, a tongue deceitful in their mouth?
So God is not fooled by their little games of playing with the different weights. He wants his people to be true, honest, above board, consistent. It's an integrity issue here, holding to the standard. When we come to money, you see some of these Roman coins. I think two of them are the same, but you can see there's at least four different Roman emperors, and if I could read Greek, I could tell you who they were, but I'm not that good because their names are stamped on each of those. So those early payments were done in barter, and then got to using precious metals. They'd weigh out the precious metals. Abraham weighed out money, precious metals, for the purchase of the ground that he buried his wife in. Coins didn't come about until 700 BC, and that seems to fit with our scriptural evidence. Nehemiah was the first mention of a real coin. We're not going to have time to look at these verses. The problem that they had in the New Testament time, they actually had too many different kinds of money. They had three different coinages being circulated. And as you look at these, it starts, as far as value, the Jewish coin is mentioned there as the widow putting her two mites in. In Mark, it's mentioned there. And that's the least of value. Then it went through the Roman coins and then the Greek coins. And it just seems like the value just continues to go up as you look at each of those. So when we get to talking about the drachma, the mina, and the talent, you're really getting into some real value. And so I just wanted to kind of put that on the scale for you as you come across some of those terminologies. Kind of have to stop and just think, okay, I'm not going to be able to know the precise value of this for many reasons, but I can see where it kind of falls on the scale of value. So when Jesus is talking about giving his servants the talents and burying their talent in the ground, it was a significant amount of money that they were doing that with. And so maybe just kind of help us a little bit in our Bible study. But there are so many things, you know, to try to bring the value of Old Testament, New Testament coinage up to today's values of things. There's just a lot involved in trying to equate that. And I think kind of one of the better ways to look at it is, what was a day's wage and what is a day's wage for me? And so, and I forgot to put the verse in there, but it talks about the master of the vineyard hiring individuals for a specific amount. As they worked that day, he changed the amount a little bit, or gave the same amount for a different hours worked, I guess is what it was. But you look at, this was considered the price of a day's wage for a laborer. And that can be translated to, what's the price of a day's wage today? We can't really get into figuring the value of the gold and all of this kind of thing. It's just very complicated.